Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when I join us by the talkcast every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, you can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702 or search for Starfleet Universe On Call. You will find us there. Also, Twitch.tv, we got a channel there, which I also co-broadcast every single week on that channel. And you can join in on the chat room, which is always great. And I'm always there to watch you guys and pay attention and hopefully respond. I can't always be looking directly at the chat room, you know. Give me a break. And that's going to be a twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. If you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to reach me via Twitter. My account there is sfuoncall, same spelling. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. It's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. Just a reminder that if you want to follow me on Twitter or my personal account, that I'm very very happy to be both an O's fan, though suffering sometimes, and happy to be a Catholic. And, of course, also, I love tech. So if any of those subjects bothers you, don't follow me. And, of course, I have my Franz Games account. So if you want to, you can follow, see what's going on with Franz Games, any new updates to the client, anything's happening with Starfleet Warlord, and of course the lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week: we have the Shapeways miniatures. Yes, actually I was wrong. I thought they weren't going to come out this week because I didn't see anything about them, and lo and behold, they are here. What was actually announced this week from Shapeways, added to that wonderful library of minis, is the Federation Dreadnought Tug, the Hydran Lord Admiral Heavy Command Cruiser, and the Lord Cardinal Heavy Command Cruiser. Okay, Lord Cardinal and Lord Admiral. Well, there's the two close together. Both the Lyran and LDR Prairie Lion Survey Carrier, and the Carnivon Frigate and Destroyer. Yes, the Carnivon was destroyed, but the ships do live on. And if moving onward to the SFB Online tournament, and that at the moment is just Masters Tournament. And that one, we got all the signups. It's already started. And thank you for all those who signed up. And just a reminder, the signups are closed. I will take down that signup page very, very soon. I apologize for anyone who signed up after the signups were closed, giving you a false hope of that you might actually join. I'm sorry. I apologize. When it comes to the FedCom library, I had a little chance to update the library a little today. I was very crazy busy this past weekend because I spent a whole day in training and then another day, which was just catching up on everything I wasn't able to do during the week. I mean, on that Saturday. So, you know, you lose the whole day of half your weekend, you run out of time to do the same amount of things. Okay, when it comes to squadron size ships, there is more. It's now up to 490. Also, the fleet size ships are up to 385. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and all Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's me, and actually, we have the one, the only, Gary. How you doing?
Hello, how are you?
Doing good. How about yourself, man?
Oh, do you have a topic planned, or
I had
would
a
it be
topic
okay for me to launch a trial of possession to hijack the topic?
I'd say hijack the topic, because my topic might be interesting to me because it's something I've been having on my mind for quite a few weeks, but I don't think it really goes together with having you around. It's not a good topic for discuss between multiple people. So,
basically. Okay. So, well, I'll tell you what. I'll do a quick description of what I had in mind.
Okay.
And then
go.
You can decide whether you like it better than the one you're going to do.
Okay.
Okay, So tomorrow, the folks at Catalyst Game Labs are finally launching the Oklan Sourcebook, which is going to basically show the beginnings of the new phase of Battletech history, future history. And it's actually funny because the table of contents was posted, and if you haven't read a novel, Hour of the Wolf, it's a bit spoilery, so I should warn you that. But the book basically takes place on Terra in the year 3151.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the places that is noted in the table of contents, let's just say that people from the Starfleet universe will be familiar with it.
Right.
Can you guess which one?
Oh, it's Vulcan?
No. It's a place where there's a certain bureau where someone could have certain designs on it.
You got me on that one. I'm sorry. I'm sure you'll say
what it. What does the A from ADB stand for?
Amarillo.
Yes.
Ah, okay. I thought it was something in the Star Trek SFB universe.
No. It's in, like, basically who knows what's in Amarillo in the Federation, you know, by that time. But anyway, so yeah, basically, it's coming out, and it's probably the full color book as well, and prints here in Canada too. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And
hold on for one minute.
The next,
Chris, just let you know, we're talking about BattleTech. That's the game. So go forward.
Now,
Gary,
there is a reason why I'm mentioning it on a Starfleet Universe podcast, so I'm not going to try and go entirely off rails.
Oh, I understand. So I know you're going to be tying it in.
I'm not trying to turn this into a, you know, BattleTech on call. I mean, there is a method to my madness.
Oh, I understood. And we've talked about BattleTech before on this podcast.
True. So, So, there's both this book, and then there's another book that is supposedly due out in September. Apparently, the other book's already at the printers.
Oh.
It's called Tamar Rising. And it's also going to be a full-color book, which is also going to have a fold-out full-color campaign map.
Wow.
And what's interesting is that if you go to the Twitter feed for Catalyst Game Labs, you'll see, if you scroll down a bit, mm-hmm. there's actually a posting that they've done, which shows a preview of the Tamarizing material.
Right.
So you see the cover, which, now bear in mind that the back cover is like super spoiler in terms of what happens in Ilklan and in the novel Hour of the Wolf that came out at the beginning of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't
read the book and you don't want to know about the spoiler, don't read the back cover.
Yes, exactly. But what's interesting is that if you actually take a look at the picture, there's like a little kind of sneaky preview, like a side preview or small section of the Innosphere map, because it's not the full amount of the Innosphere. It's just the region of the Innosphere, where the story of Tamar Rising takes place, which basically takes mm-hmm. place over the 12 months after Ilklan takes place. Basically, you'll notice that not only are there little lines connecting the dots that represent different star systems, and the dots have distances in light years, because a jump ship in Battletech can only go as far as 30 light years per jump. So the lines basically have the note telling you how many light years it is to get from one system to another. But what they also have is that there's these little numbers printed in each circle to represent a star system. Now, they haven't said what they are, but some of the speculation has been that they actually represent recharge times, because in Battletech, every time you do a jump,
right,
you have to basically draw energy from the nearest star refill your capacitor, basically, so that you mm-hmm. can jump again. It usually takes about a week or so, like in your average, like Earth, like Sol type star. But so basically, if that is true, then this map, campaign map, basically gives you the tools you need in order to actually play out the stuff that happens for yourself, like with various levels of the game.
Right.
Because there's a strategic level that they have, and operation level and so forth. So it's kind of like how in the SFU, you've got Federation and Empire, and then you've got various tactical games and so forth, right. Whatever. You've got the RPG stuff, like in Prime Directive.
Right.
They've got similar kind of like...
Right, you got F&E for the more strategic. You've operational? Yeah. We don't really have...
Well, there's talk about Federation Admiral or...
Right.
Some sort of Module V for SFV that would do something like that. But you're right. I mean, like for the time being, at least, we don't really have that level squared off just yet.
Right.
So, yeah, actually, if I don't know if you want to bring it up just to show people who are watching the video just to see what the Ill Plan and Tamar Rising stuff looks like.
Okay, where should I look for it?
Okay, so go to... Just go to the Twitter feed for Catalyst Game Labs, because they're basically the imprint that BattleTech and Shadowrun are currently based under.
Okay. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. This is gonna be one of those crap. Give me a sec. I mean, I have to like, log into Twitter. Deny. So what's the account?
I think it comes up as Catalyst Game Lab, but it should be Catalyst Game Labs, either way.
Okay. This Game Lab.
Of course, another way to get to it would be to go to the homepage for Board Game BattleTech, which is bg.battletech.com, and you'll see a link in the top right corner of that webpage that brings you to the same thing.
So...
You should be able to see it without logging into Twitter as well.
Okay, bgtech.com, is that what you said?
bg.battletech.com.
Oh, bg.battletech. If we could spell BattleTech correctly, that'd be good. .com. Okay. Okay, that's much better. Kill Twitter. Okay.
Now also, if you go back to the BattleTech homepage that you're there for a second, so if you have two tabs up, on the homepage for BattleTech, you should see in the news in the top right, just underneath the link to the Twitter feed, it should be a thing that says Ill Plan Table of Contents. But if you go to the actual Twitter feed, just scroll down a couple of ones, and you should see a posting from like a couple of weeks ago showing the preview, like the glimpse at the Tamar Rising.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, okay. Here it is. The table of contents. Cool. Nice. Right. I don't see. Okay. So I see the table of contents. That's about all I can see. For the Ill Clan.
Uh-huh.
Is that all I meant to see?
Oh, no. It was in, like, if you're still on the Twitter feed, scroll down a bit more. Just like,
no, I didn't go to the Twitter feed. You said all I had to do was go to bg.battletech.com.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. So if you're on the homepage for BT, go scroll up to the very top of the page. And look in the corner at the top right. You should see underneath the Catalyst logo, you should see a Facebook link, a Twitter link, and something else.
Okay. Yes. So click on the Twitter link?
Oh. Yes, please.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Okay, so what am I looking for?
Just go through the recent posts, and you should see one that talks about reviewing a print copy, a print run copy of Tamar Rising.
Okay, that's for Kill Penalty. Not sure why they have that up there, but okay. Ill Clan Sourcebook. Is that what we're looking for?
No, well, a few down.
Okay. Good news, new story. Ba ba bump. No. More print proofs from July 28th?
Yeah.
Okay.
You should see a, the front cover should show like a battle scene where you see like a kind of red and yellow mech on the right and kind of like a beigey colored one on the left.
Yep. Okay, and there and there's the and behind that folded up, that's the strategic level map.
Yep, and it also shows a preview of the inside of the book. And what's interesting is that, because until the Kickstarter stuff happened, most BattleTech source books for the last maybe 10 years and so forth have been black and white inside with like color covers.
Mm-hmm.
You might on occasion get like a field manual that might have like some color pages showing maps of the inner sphere, but the actual rest of the book will be black and white. But since the Kickstarter kicked in, basically, it seems that for their these kind of projects and stuff, they've been able to go full color with them.
Mm-hmm. That looks really nice. I actually saw the table of contents too that they have on the website for Ill Clan. And the, interesting. I like the font. It's a, I like the color. I'm as a games fan. I, you know, a person who loves games. I love buying, you know, physical copies of the games. Learning it looks nice. It's just that I'm not sure if it could be read. At least I might have a hard time reading it myself. Given,
one thing to bear in mind is that on the page for the Ill Clan table of contents, there are scaled down previews. So I think you can click on each page because there's like the first and second page for the TOC,
mm-hmm.
and it brings you to a link that shows a larger version of the files, which is more legible. But again, I mean, I guess depending on how much you want to avoid spoilers in terms of what happens on Terra during the events and stuff, I don't know how much you'd want to read until tomorrow when the book comes out, basically. Although it's going to be released, they're saying that it's going to have a street date in like brick and mortar stores by Wednesday. So
cool.
It's just like that they're releasing it on their own online store tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So now.
Continue.
Oh, no, go on. The interesting thing is that getting to Ill Clan has been, I won't say it's been quite as long a wait as it has been for like Module X2 from the SAE, but it is worth noting that the version of Ill Clan and also of Tamar Rising, because with the original plan, because the plan for Ill Clan has gone through about two or three different incarnations and different line developers, because Catalyst and so forth, they've had more turnover than ADB has had in terms of who's been like in the brain trust in terms of running things forward and so forth.
Right.
So, because the original plan for Ill Clan was that, or one of, because there was like some hints that were put out into the community or whatever, like years and years ago. And I think the very earliest plan was that they were going to basically have Ill Clan happen in like 3150 or 3151 or whatever. And then immediately they're going to do a 100-year time jump to the year 3250. And they're going to introduce an entirely new generation of technology that would make the older tech obsolete. So kind of like how Module X2 could, in theory, make pre-X2 stuff, you know, obsolete, whatever. But that plan did not work. It didn't go through because there's actually a lot of pushback and stuff. So there's a lot of people saying, like, you know, it's taken such a long time. Because part of the issue as well is that even getting to the Ill Clan era from a classic BattleTech or Alpha Strike perspective has been a such struggle because you may recall that there was a clicky game from WizKids called Mech Warrior Dark Age.
Yes.
And it basically had the little figures with little dials on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. Oh, I remember Dark Age, saying that at Origins many, 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 many years ago at this point.
Yeah, that's right. So when Dark Age came out, it basically skipped the time from the... Because before Dark Age came out, classic BattleTech had reached the year 3067. And suddenly, Dark Age was kicking off in 3132, and the Inner Sphere was like totally, largely unrecognizable. But you know, and the people who were doing the classic BattleTech were not actually allowed to go beyond 3067 for years. So it wasn't until after the clicky game went away, then the people, I guess, that were now Catalyst, because it's been through a few incarnations, were given permission to slowly ease their way through. But they had to go through all the things that happened afterwards. And what I say was one source book that kind of fell out that was really interesting is because in Dark Age, they don't necessarily talk about what happens in the homeworld clan region. It's just kind of like, you know, a lot of context has been dropped. But then Catalyst, once they got a chance, the ability to access that area, they did a source book about almost 10 years ago called The Wars of Reaving, which actually won an Origins Award for best book. It's an amazing book. It was basically the first time that Catalyst had the wheel for like what is essentially a new addition to the story, like a region that had never been covered before. And they really nailed it. They basically showed that they're the one, they have the wherewithal to be able to move the timeline forward and so forth. And so, but even then, okay, so there was like, they had to basically go a couple of years and then get into the Dark Age from the BattleTech perspective and basically move things on to the year 3145, which is a few years after the clicky game ended. And so for the last several years, the end of the Dark Age has basically been Catalyst thing rather than the clicky game thing.
Right.
But in any case, what that basically meant is that BattleTech for about 20 years or so has not been able to move. It's not been the driver of its own destiny in terms of its storyline, because it's only now been able to come out of the Dark Age and stuff. But although there are certain elements of the Dark Age that still apply. So that's why, I guess, originally Catalyst had this idea that they just do a 100-year time skip and then just like draw the line under the Dark Age entirely and have their own, you know, exclusive era that they could divide from the ground up. But basically, that wasn't really all that popular an idea. There's a lot of people basically saying, well, hang on a second. You guys really took ownership of the Dark Age and made it. Because if you read things like Field Manual 3145, like they really made it a really fascinating setting, because there's a lot of stuff that was never even shown in the clicky game that is really dramatic. And, you know, it would be a disservice to cut it off and time skip. So they basically decided that, no, we're not going to time skip. And so the question then became, okay, so if the events of Ill Clan have to be not quite as final as they would have been to justify a 100-year time skip, well, then what's going to happen then? Like, how are you basically going to have the Dark Age come to an end, but then allow the following stories to take on the next year or the same year, rather than have it 10 or 50 or 100 years from now? So there's actually been a large amount of, you know, rewriting and rejigging and so forth, and even in terms of deciding whether there would be a big technology skip, because it seems that there's not going to be a rush into new technology, like a new era of technology anytime soon. I mean, there are new mechs and there's new types of units. So, for example, one of the clans, the Hell's Horses, they've actually been designing these things called Quad Vs, and basically they're like a quad mech that can transform into a vehicle. So they're not like, kind of like, you think about how like when like BattleTech first bore of the concept of a plane that could transform into a mech from like other sources. Well, this is kind of like going at it from a different direction. But anyway, so yeah, basically the version of Ill Clan that we're about to see is totally different than it would have been. And arguably it's better for it, because now you have a proper building block to be able to move into this new era and really get your teeth into it. So, for example, that other book that's coming out, Tamar Rising, it's actually one of, from what they're saying, it's actually going to be one of four concurrent source books that are going to be coming out. And each of the four is going to pick a different corner of the Inner Sphere and say, here's what's happening over the next year there. Here's what's going to happen there. And then, who knows, like maybe after that, then we'll see what happens for the next big thing. Because, I mean, I don't really get into spoilers, but there's a certain ticking clock in terms of something that's happening that might justify why the times that these things are happening in universe are what they are. But yeah, so there's maybe we should do a spoiler cast for it or something at some point. But anyway, basically,
well, the question is, my dear friend, is that how many people actually be listening to a Starfleet Universe podcast to find out about BattleTech?
Yeah, I know. So, but anyway, okay. So I'm getting to the end of the bit. That's
yes. Wrap it up, man.
Back into the SFU. Okay. So if you think about Module X2, I mean, when Supplement 2, I mean, the product that dare not speak its name, it came up with a vision of what that would look like, but it didn't really work. And then also bear in mind that the SFU itself didn't it wasn't as broad or as deep as it is nowadays. Like, for example, when Supplement 2 came out, there was no such thing as the Omega Octant.
Right.
There was no Module C5. There was not even a map of the galaxy. I mean, you think about it, like the galactic map that we know for the SFU, it first came out in Captain's Log 27. I mean, that's... and also the idea of there being a Zorkalian tyranny on the far side of the galaxy.
Right, basically.
That's kind of trying to come get us and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically,
the new Big Bad. Yeah.
Well, as you pointed out with the Omega, the big thing there is the expansion of the Starfleet universe outside of the Alpha Octant, and to include the whole Milky Way galaxy, at least start to.
So yeah, there's been so many. Things that so now basically whatever Module X2 will do, some of these things will be happening even if they don't involve X2 technology. Like, for example, the Galactic Survey Ship, the XGSX Sakharov, it does its voyage to and from Omega in the Y210s, which is like slap dang in the middle of what would be the X2 era. But there's no X2 ships involved. There's still an X1 ship, and the ships it encounters in Omega. It hasn't been said if Omega even ever develops X2 tech, but if it does, when would that happen? Because the Omega is like about a decade and a half behind Alpha in terms of X1 tech, so it'll probably take a while for them to develop it there, which is fine. But so yeah, basically, there's still a whole lot of stories to tell in the X2 era that don't need X2 chips. So yeah, basically. But yeah, there's also there's not just things in terms of how are the Empires going to recover after the Andromeda invasion, or how are they going to deal with the Zorkalians if they invade, when they invade? And, there's also questions like, so after Operation Unity, a bunch of the Empires now have a bunch of ships basically garrisoned in the Magellanic Cloud trying to, get rid of Andromeda remnants. So how's that going to play out? I mean, I wouldn't expect to see that this side of, say, a new Magellanic module, but that would have to be written after X2 comes out, so that we know what the building blocks are. And then also, where else does in the galaxy or in the region of the galaxy do survey ships actually go to? Because, for example, is there anything in the greater Magellanic Cloud? Or is there, for example, if you read Captain's Log 27, it explains what the Sargasso Storm Zone is, how it functions. And also some recent books, like in the Call to Arms, hint at the fact that there are carnivons, there might be carnivons there. Well, how do we know that? So, is it basically survey ships going to Sigma, Sargasso or whatever, and Sigma even, and basically saying, oh, look, there's carnivons here. I mean, how does that information get into the Air Force data tapes?
Right.
And how would that work in a prime directive sense? Not even just for Starfleet Battles or Federation Commander. How do you, as a player, function in this new era? That's at least 20 years. I mean, from Y205 until, say, Y2225, when the data tapes run out in Alpha, at least. And so, I mean, how do you basically put this all together in a way that basically makes people excited about this new era, even beyond the various incarnations of what the actual X2 ships will look like? I mean, how will they be put together and so forth? I mean, there's been so many arguments, over the last several years in terms of how that's going to work. I'm sure it's no less heated than what it's been in terms of trying to figure out what the ill clan era is going to look like. So I do think it's interesting to see about how one long-term franchise, which has its own large population of people who are wedded to a certain era and location. Because, like, Battletech has a lot of people, even now, who are, they only want to play in the Succession Wars. They don't want to know about the clans. They don't want to know about Dark Age or Ill Clan. And that's fine. I mean, I'm not trying to criticize them.
Oh, understood. It just reminds me of the whole people with the General War. You know, a lot of people play the General War era. That's it. They don't want to mess around with X ships or second generation X ships. Forget about the Omegas. Forget about the LMC. Forget about expanding, you know, to other galaxies, you know, like the Tholian galaxy. You know, what's the number of that? I can't remember.
M81.
Thank you. You know, expanding.
So I think it'd be interesting to basically. Now, of course, there's a lot of differences in terms between the Battletech universe and the Starfleet universe. Like their trajectories lately.
Then there's the history. The thing is also with SFU versus Battletech. In that the Starfleet universe has been under, for the most part, one designer for the whole lifetime of the product. Yes, TFG, Task Force Games, dang, took me a moment there. Helped direct, the direction of how the game was moving for a while there, because, you know, they were worried about selling games. And, you know, they just say, Steve, this is what you need to be doing so that we can make more money. That Task Force Games was not a great manager of said games, of the different games that they actually own. Own the IP for. But anyway, versus from the understanding of what you're talking about, Gary, is that Battletech has been under the conservatorship of multiple companies. Correct? Did I get that wrong?
Yeah, and also, it is. But okay, so basically, one other thing too is that if you think about how the SFU has been able to lean quite heavily, heavily is my too strong a word, but it's been able to retain the rights to use those subsets of on-screen ships and things that have been there from the beginning. So there's still a Constitution class heavy cruiser. There's still a Klingon D7, there's still a Romulan Warbird, and so forth. And even though there's like a whole ton of new ships for those same empires and also new empires and so forth that have been made to exist, especially on Shapeways. I mean, like, who would have imagined, even 5 years ago, if you basically call into Posca and say, hey, there's going to be 3,000 ships on Shapeways. And it's like, how would that have been put together in your brain? I mean, like...
Well, one, like, we wouldn't know about Shapeways, but the whole idea of having 3,000 different miniatures that you can purchase.
Yeah.
Totally would have blown your mind.
Yeah. And then also the fact that both companies have kind of been able to lean into things like print-on-demand, but in different ways. So, like Battletech has been able to get fiction going again in terms of, like, novel and novellas and so forth. But because they usually do POD rather than basically ordering traditional print runs, the turnaround is actually much quicker. So they don't have to wait around for like a traditional publisher, like printer, to run off several thousand copies and then ship them to various bookstores like Indigo here in Canada or Barnes & Noble in the US or whatever.
Right.
They can basically just say, all right, here it is. We'll put it on Amazon too, or you can order print on demand directly from the Catalyst shop or whatever. And here it is, it's on Kindle too. And then, if you want the actual PDF, then it's on the Catalyst own server. It's also on DirectTo RPG and so forth. So similar to how, ADB still have to order the color covers and also the counter sheets from separate companies. But most of the actual innards of like an SSD book or a rule book and so forth can be done in-house.
Right,
so but these are SMB, because Federation Commander, a tricky thing because you need the color ship cards and stuff. But yeah.
Right, but still... I know there's some people that still would like to have it so that you can buy like Federation Commander or Starfleet, maybe not Starfleet Battles, but definitely Federation Commander in a book form like ACTA, Call to Arms, a Call to Arms. How to remember that. How they had that nice...
Well, they tried that with... you mean like in color?
Yeah, in color and all that. The nice hardback, that you can just have there and you can read it. It's more along the lines of like the old Dungeons and Dragons books. There's some people that really would like to have that. But at the same, I'm sure that'd be very nice. The problem, as you've pointed out, is that print on demand allows ADB to do certain things that they normally would not be able to do. Because yes, they have to pre-order the covers. The nice, if you want to have a nice cover on it, they have to go pre-order that, and it costs them money, and they have to have that in stock. But at the same time, it's not the whole contents of. They don't have another company printing out the whole book. So the amount of initial outlay for those books are a lot less. And so you can get away with, okay, so each cover, well, I'm not sure. Let's say it costs 50 cents a cover. And so you buy 1,000 of them. So it costs you $500. So it's $500 outlay for 1,000 copies of the rule book. It's worth it. Obviously, FedCom is a little different because FedCom has those wonderful, beautiful ship cards,
So I'll give you
those
an example.
Hard things like this stuff. For those who are actually looking at the screen, you can see these wonderful ship cards that they print out, it's laminated and all that kind of thing, which they have to print out beforehand. They don't actually do these.
Okay, so I'll give you a BattleTech example and also a Starfleet Universe example of just, I guess, one of the things that happens. So when Mongoose teamed up with ADB to do a Call to Arms Starfleet, that OG edition, that rule book is actually a hardcover print. And there's lots of color pages in it, like for the actual pages that have the ships on them. Now, ADB, their own version of, like, the current version of Call to Arms, I mean, the PDFs are actually in color. Like, if you look at the PDF version and if you bring it to, like, a print shop or whatever like that, you can print it in color yourself. But the version that ADB do print on demand is in grayscale. So, but that's okay because, I mean, the actual text is black and white anyway in terms of, like, how many attack dice or photon torpedoes or you have or whatever. But I guess it doesn't make as presenty a product and so forth, whatever. To give you an example, now to double back to BattleTech for a second, they had that issue where, before the Kickstarter, they were really trying to push Alpha Strike, which is basically, it's a quicker play game. It uses, if anyone here is familiar with the old Battle Force game system that was done decades ago for BattleTech.
Oh, jeez, yes.
If you basically use the little stat cards for BattleTech, Battle Force, rather, and you say, instead of grouping them together into a Lance or Star, you basically say, right, this is a miniature, and this is the Alpha Strike unit card force, and then that basically allows you to play like faster games and so forth using miniatures rather than, and the idea is that Alpha Strike, kind of like with Federation Commander, or not actually, with a Call to Arms, I should say, because Alpha Strike is intended for hexless play, although you can play with hexes if you want, but the real onus of the game is to use miniatures and terrain and play on an actual tabletop that way, rather than with BattleTech or BattleForce, the real onus is really playing on hexes the way it is for FedCom or Starfleet Battles. So in order to support Alpha Strike, they tried to do these things called combat manuals, which were basically full-color source books for certain settings. So they did one for mercenaries and so forth, and they did one for the Draconis Combine. And they were going to do other ones, like for the other great houses and stuff. But at the time, the margins weren't there because the way in which the product would cost to put it together, it wasn't as viable compared to how at the time most of their regular source books were black and white in the middle and you only had color covers. But now, since the Kickstarter that they've had, I don't want to speak in terms of like what the inner workings have been, although they have had some very interesting AMAs posted on the Catalyst YouTube channel, which is definitely worth a watch at some point. Like, they've got one, like a spoiler cast for Hour of the Wolf, and they've got one where they talk to the line developers and all that kind of stuff, whatever. And basically, since then, the standard in terms of the products they're putting together mm-hmm. has raised to the point where they're all like the combat manuals now. So, in principle, they could go back and finish that series, or they could basically reboot it entirely, because one thing I didn't like about the combat manuals is that they stopped just around the clan invasion. And really, I mean, if Catalyst are trying to promote their own new Eldclan era, then really they ought to have some faction books that bring you up to that era. And so, like, you know, basically say, all right, look, it's 3051, there's a thing called Eldclan, your guys are this. And then maybe come with like a little thing, like maybe a page basically saying, okay, so if you want to play in the old era, that's fine, we're not trying to stop you from doing that, here's the stuff you use for that era, and so on. So basically just try to kind of like hit the ground running in terms of like where the new era is going to go, but you know, like how that's going to go is another story. So so like if you think about with ADV and so forth, whatever, I mean, I guess I'd like to think that there'd be some sort of printer who can do for ADB what the current printers for Eldclan and Tamar Rising are doing for Catalyst and stuff. But, you know, it's all a case of the margins there too, I suppose.
Right,
but
right.
It's not necessarily a thing that would work, because for Battletech, like if you buy Eldclan or Tamar Rising, it says on the back, compatible with Total Warfare and Alpha Strike. So in the sense that you're buying a source book that you can then have at least two, if not more, game systems that you can it'll function with.
Mm-hmm.
But in SFB, in the SFU, you can't really do that, because only Captain's Log covers a broad variety of games. Like you can't really, like, it's like you wouldn't necessarily imagine, say, Module X2 coming with the FC X2 ships attack material as well. They will be two entirely separate products. And so the question would be, well, which game lines would benefit from a step up in terms of the, you know, the methods of production? I mean, would it be Call to Arms? Maybe a Call to Arms X2 ship, or will it be FC X2 ships attack and so forth? Because, you know, maybe not, because maybe the form factor would work better for Call to Arms, because you're not actually drawing on the book. Like I mean, if an X2 ships attack came with ship cards, well, how are you going to get them out of the book? I mean, like, are you still going to have to go to a different printer to print the actual ship cards and then include them too? Although, in fairness, you know, as I say, the Tamar Rising is coming with a separate campaign map. So there is a possibility, I suppose, you could do a composite thing. So, yeah, basically it's like, is there like some sort of way in which like that kind of setup would even work? Like if the cost-benefit analysis was worth it, is there a venue in the SFU where this kind of thing would really help with things, and if so, what is that?
You mean the whole idea of shipping a different physical product, meaning like selling I'm imagining at the moment is basically, actually, it can't be that. Because what I was thinking of when I say it can't be that is the whole idea of having these beautiful color SSDs, you know, print out on color glossy ship, you know, SSDs. Is that the kind of thing you were thinking of, or am I missing?
All right, I'll give you another point of view. So another example.
Give me an example.
So when the deal was done with Mongoose, we got a Call to Arms Starfleet, yes. And then we got the Starline 2500s, yes. Now, we were also supposed to get a version of Prime Directive to work with Mongoose Traveler. But that never happened. At least it hasn't happened yet. So, and had it happened under the original terms of the deal, where Mongoose were more heavily involved, than right now kind of Mongoose seem to take more of a backseat. They're focusing on their own Traveler stuff, but right. not on the Prime Directive stuff. They're leaving that to ADV. There probably would have been a hardcover color book that would have been, here's Prime Directive, here's Traveler, go nuts. And it would have basically been, I guess, a step up in terms of production quality compared to, well, in terms of how it looked, in terms of the rules and stuff, that would have been a trickier thing. Because that's the other tricky thing about doing these fancy books, is that if there's a lot of errors in them, then that's a lot of money to throw away, you know. Because think about how much work had to go into Call to Arms to get it working, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, you'll get what we've had in the past when it comes to hard copy books. Hard copy rules, because what you have is you have the hard copy rules, and then what you have to do is you have the only way to quote-unquote correct it is that you have to then post up an addendum list on the website. The players have to print out that list, you know, all references to this rule, this rule, this rule, this rule, this rule, okay, this is an adjustment, this was worded wrong, blah, 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 so that people know that what was actually in the rule is incorrect, which is nuts.
So now let's assume that if/when ADB finally do get around to doing Traveler Prime Directive, that those kind of things will be taken care of, or at least to a large extent, that, you know, things will be as tidy as they need to be and so forth, making sure that the universe rules work the way they should do and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question would be, A, is it better to release Traveler Prime Directive Core Rulebook the same way that is the current model for ADB, where you'd order a color cover, but the contents would be basically print on demand, black and white, and you would basically ship it directly from ADB's warehouse?
Right.
Or if these companies, because again, I mean, from what I gather, the printing situation is somewhat different for Catalyst with like the current stuff than it had been maybe say 10 or 20 years ago for older Battletech source books. If you're able to do maybe like a not too big a print run and it not be quite so expensive and so forth, but you're getting a greater visibility because it's the kind of thing that makes a bigger impact into those game stores that still carry RPG source books.
Mm-hmm.
Then is it worth the extra investment to really squeak up the Traveler Prime Directive book, whenever it is,
right,
and go after that shelf space,
mm-hmm,
with the kind of product? Because, I mean, you and I would be quite perfectly happy with option A, but there's a lot of people out there who maybe never thought of Prime Directive yet. Maybe option B would work better if it didn't bankrupt the company. So, I mean, I guess the question is, like, where would the line be? And is there anything based on the experience that Catalyst is having now with these new books that, you know, that we could learn from, or that we could,
understood.
Well, take notes from?
Right. But the of course, the big issue, the big difference from what I see from the Catalyst books is that they're not hardcover, which is even more expensive. Yes, they have basically, looks like color pages when it comes to the rule book, which is going to be quite expensive. Now, compared to normal white, black and white printed out paper. Yeah, the paper that ADB uses is not this cheap, you know, copier paper. It's good quality paper that they printed out on. But it, you know, the cost goes quite a bit. And the problem is not the cost. That's never the issue with ADB. The reason why they switched to a print-on-demand model is that the outlay. I would love to know from ADB how many copies of Starfleet Battle Force they still have. How many more copies of that card game they still have. Because that was a physical hard product that you could probably, I'm pretty sure you can still buy. I'd have to double check the website. I feel pretty confident in saying that they still have quite a few hundreds, and not maybe thousands, of copies of Starfleet Battle Force still available for sale. And that's an outlay which they did many years ago. You know, I don't know how many thousands of dollars they put forward to that, and the return is coming back really, really slowly on that game. You know, in the meantime, they have to have it sitting there taking up space in the warehouse, which I'm sure you'll agree. That's the one thing that normal stores do their best not to do. They don't want inventory laying around sitting in their warehouse or even in their back storeroom, because it costs them money.
Just two things. One is, on the one hand, Ilkland is actually going to be hardcover, but I'm not so sure if Tamarizing, because I think Tamarizing looks like it's got like a doctor-y kind of cover. Like, it looks like they've taken the cover off, at least in that preview picture. Like, I guess, you know, we'll have to see what it looks like when it's actually in print, when it's actually in people's hands. But anyway.
Right. Oh, yeah, the preview cover at the moment looks like a soft cover.
Yeah. So, now, what I was going to say is, now there's another book that came out not that long ago. Is, I think, it's basically this thing called Alpha Strike Commander's Edition. Because in terms of actually the iteration of the Alpha Strike, the current version is the Commander's Edition. And it basically incorporates most of the stuff. Because when Alpha Strike was first released about 10 years ago or so, or 8 years ago maybe, they did an expansion called Alpha Strike Companion. But they ended up basically cannibalizing a large portion of the stuff from the Companion, and they basically put it into the Commander's Edition. So, like, it's still missing a few things for, like, aerospace operations or conversion rules from Total Warfare and so forth. But long story short, the Commander's Edition is the current edition. But even it's had three print runs. So they actually changed the cover from the third print run, so it has, like, a different bunch of mechs on the front or whatever. So whatever volume of printing that they're doing, I guess it seems to be a way that basically once they sell out of a current batch, then they basically can go and do a new batch, but they can use the new batch to add in all the errata that was missing the first time, or maybe tweak a little bit and so forth. So, like, for example, if they ever do a fourth batch, I think it would be nice if they could maybe add a page or two saying, oh, we're the Ilkan, go buy the Ilkan book, or go buy Tamarizing, that sort of thing. And then basically, you know, like, help kind of like bring it in line with the current thing. But I guess there is, like, whatever amount of books they're printing, it's enough to cover their need at a given time, but it's not so much that their warehouse is completely stuffed. So it's probably a good sign of how successful the game is being, because there seems to be still a pretty large Venn diagram gap between Alpha Strike players and Total Warfare players. I mean, there's some players that play both, but there seems to be a large number of people on one side or the other that don't really interact. So if you're in one of those groups, maybe you don't necessarily get a sense of how successful the other side is. Mm-hmm. But I guess from Catalyst's side, things must be going well enough that they are doing multiple printings. So then the question would be for, say, Trapper Prime Directive or whatever, how, in terms of what the value, what the quotes the printer can give you,
right.
Is there a good level that's basically enough of a print run to not seem like you're manufacturing a shortage, but also not too much so that the warehouse is stuffed, so basically it's like how to thread that needle and stuff, you know, so, mm-hmm. Or even if the needle should be threaded, I mean, like, is it worth the extra challenge to do this?
Right. Understood. Here's always the gotcha in that. Now, one, we don't know how much they're keeping in their warehouse. Two, we will not know for years to come, whether this gambit pays off. Because that's always, see, that's the issue, is that the, when you put money forward to buy hard product, and even if you try to limit, usually when you by limiting the number, the print run, that means it the amount of profit is less because of the cost is usually greater on a per item basis. At least that's the way it usually goes for these things. At least that's what ADB has told us about other products that they've sold in the past. That, you know, they can either spend, you know, they can buy 5,000 copies and only cost them like $7. But if they order only 1,000 copies, it was going to cost them $10 a copy. You know, things like that. Or they let to, and that's always, you know, they're always managing that. And the thing is, as I said, is we won't know because we don't know what their stock is like. We don't know how many copies and how the outflow is because, one, they're a private company, and two, they're not, I'm sure they're not willing to tell us. It's not until later on, not until like at least 3 years down the road from today, from the day that they actually ship this product, will we know the effect. Because I'm sure Catalyst Games, like any other company, you really can't tell the success or failure until 3 years down the road. Because if they're still in business, Kickstarter helped
them with that because they were able to like gauge in a very public way, I guess, just how much latent demand there is for Battle Tech stuff and how many people in that community are willing to throw stupid amounts of money at them. Actually, one other thing I should point out too is that the miniature situation for them is quite different because they don't have the same kind of shapeway set up. Instead, there's a company called Ironman Metals that does like metal miniatures. And then also they have been doing like various box sets and like Lance and Star Packs and so forth, whatever. And but those ones, I guess, they're like injection molds and stuff. So you're not really going about it the same way. So ADB doesn't really need to do that because, you know, the shapeway stuff is there. Although, I mean, when you think about it, like a average shapeway ship, I mean, especially if you're using the high quality plastic,
right,
it can be like not all that cheap, especially because like certain shapes of ships seem to be awkward, like Peruvian ships, for example, with those wide wings.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the actual, like, it doesn't look all that much bigger or smaller compared to like, say, a Carnivon ship and so forth, it seems to be that, like, when you're doing smooth fine detail plastic, it ups the price a bit because of the width or whatever. But anyway, so there's basically something about the formula that shapeways use, I guess, to determine how expensive a mold should be. But anyway, so yeah, basically the BattleTech folks, part of the thing is that the Kickstarter has been able to help with that in a different way. So that's less of an issue.
Right.
Because
but at the same time, Gary, that's the point. That is the point. And that is, which is, I've seen have been done by other companies in the past, which is the whole idea of people prepaying for their product. So they know how many people are willing to put up or shut up. You can have people say, oh, I'll buy it. But when it comes out, they go, oh, that's too expensive. You know, I'm not going to buy it. You know, but they can't sell it for cheaper because otherwise they're going to be losing money. So that's the guts, because they did it through Kickstarter. So they had people basically plunk down their money as kind of a pre-order. And then at that point they get the money and they'll make a product of, and they can at least do an initial run, at least one run with the amount of money that people have given them already. And of course, if they don't, they're really screwed. Especially because this is Catalyst Games. This is not a single person shop. This is their first game ever, or maybe third or fourth game. And if they say, "Well, guys, you know, I'm sorry, it cost me a lot more than I expected," and you know, I wasn't able to create the game because I didn't have enough money. Because that's not the way ADB works. Currently, yeah, if ADB actually put forth a Kickstarter project for funding the creation of a new product, in theory, they could do that. They've thought about it before, and I'm not sure when they'll actually be able to, do this, something like that. Now, if they'll actually ever do anything like that and take the chance on a Kickstarter project. Because it's a lot harder than it looks. Oh, by the way, Chris, I do not, okay, I do buy ADB's claims that if they put up PDFs for sale without updating it, without any updates, that there were issues that were found and ADB corrected them, that people found out that they actually there were issues and they might correct them in the future. For like the printed copy and the electronic copy never gets updated. Yeah, I believe that they will get creamed in the reviews. Now, don't you and I will ignore anything when it comes to reviews of Starfleet Battles or Federation Commander product. The reviews they're talking about are one not reviews on the website itself. They're talking about reviews from elsewhere. And those reviews, and the problem is that people are more willing to believe the negative than the positive. All it takes is one bad review to bring down possibly, if you had like 100 sales, 100 possible sales, there's easily 50% of that. I'm willing to bet somewhere between 25 to 50% of those people, if they saw a negative review, they go, oh, I can forget that. Yeah, well, agreed, Chris. I don't know where the reviews are, but I am willing to bet that A to B has to update the PDFs. When there's issues found, at some point they have to release an updated PDF because of that's the way it is done today. Because this is.
They have already done that for a number of their products, like the FC Reference Rulebook. Anytime they were doing a new revision, if you'd already bought the PDF from like Warehouse 23 or whatever, you'd get the new PDF for free. So it's only like if a product is released as a brand new SKU, then it would be at a separate sale. But if it's the same SKU, then the updated file is posted up there for people to get. And they've been doing that with the previews for things like Call to Arms and also the Reinforcements One, and then also the new SFB modules like R4T and R4J. So because they were released as PDFs first, or beta releases, I guess, and they were going to take a couple of months to basically let people review them, and then out they go in terms of doing print runs.
Right,
So
exactly. Which is, I think, is a
the only
smart.
difference with that is going to be with. The only difference with that is that in another, I don't know if it's already happened, but either this week or next week, they're going to start printing. They did that big war book thing for Fed and Empire over the last few months. It's kind of sucked all the oxygen out of the room on the BBS for the last several months, and they had the Stratcom thing. But it basically, it's worth it though. But what the first of those, I think, is going to be coming out this month because it was originally going to be coming out a few months from now, but they basically decided that. I mean, it's so much errata. The whole point of this process for the war book is to errata and update these books. So all the work that's gone into it and so forth, they're basically about as good as they can be, at least the ones that have been, finalized, whatever, for now. But I mean, even so, if there's an issue a year or two, I would expect. I mean, I don't want to speak for ADB on this and so forth, but I would be surprised if they, I mean, basically they're saying that they would, do the same kind of update thing too. So I don't know if you've actually posted that in the news portion, but I don't know if you want to wait until the actual PDF is released. And the print
I'll
version is
wait till
free,
the
but
PDF is
it is
released.
something to keep an eye. So just keep an eye on the BBS, and I'm sure they'll post about it once the. I can't remember if it's planetary operations or something operations.
Right,
It's
and they'll
because there's
announce
like
it
four of them, and one of the first ones is going to be coming out.
yeah, they'll announce it on Facebook. I know they will. Because
So yeah, basically, so anyone who's an F&E fan, then that would definitely be a good you know, thing to look out for, because it'll hopefully, I'm personally hoping that it'll get us one step closer to the Andromedans, but there's still many more updates and things to get between there and now, so we'll see. But yeah, so yeah, basically, where were we? I forget now. So I suppose in terms of like the things that would benefit from a newer way, a newer approach in terms of the SFU,
right,
like you'd probably say maybe no for Starfleet Battles itself.
Oh,
I mean,
I agree.
It's quite comfortable in its black and white glory.
And
although there are colors,
here's the key: where is the growth going to be coming from? Where? I don't think most people in this day and age are interested in Starfleet Battles, this big, massive rule book of rules, you know, and you know. They expect for something as complicated as that. What people really want, freaking hell. What they really want at that point is they want the computer to take control of all of the complicated interactions at that point. FedCom is probably more of the possibility, the greater place for growth. It's simpler, it's smaller. As I pointed out in podcast episode many months ago, if I was ADB, I'd go retro. I'd go back and go, okay, let's republish in a better, maybe a better format, maybe in a nice book format, a nice book format, the Starfleet Battles Designer's Edition. It doesn't have to be hardback. You know, it could be a nice folded kind of thing of pages like that. And I think that would probably sell. I'm willing to bet that would sell. Now, so I think when it comes to the Designer's Edition, some of those things would have to be tweaked. I'm willing to bet you some of those things I don't think would fly much anymore. Well, Iggy, the big thing with SFB Online is that SFB Online is a tool. It helps people to stay within the rules. It doesn't enforce the rules. You know, because the rules are just way too much. Chris, I disagree with them, but I've not played it, so I can't say for whether the whole idea of having a speed 20 plasma is bad. You know, I understand. You know,
actually, I think one of the early years ISC species, the Viltressi, for their warp, their WAR ships, I'm pretty sure their plasma V is speed 20 or speed 24 or something like that. Because for that era, that's fast enough. Because by the time they get to the Y era ships, they basically have the standard regular Type F and Type G plasma torpedoes. But yeah, there is at least one example of... hang on. Because I don't know if you have the Silver Edition, the SFB Master Rulebook, on file there.
Yeah.
But if you do, it actually has the Plasma V rules in there. So you can scroll near to the back and it'll show you all about that. So, yeah, I mean, like, depending on the era, I mean, like, it's a good fit for that time period. Because
okay,
it was basically a way to kind of give those guys a nice bit of flavor. And kind of also because the Viltressi are said to be like the leaders of the ISC in later times. So giving them the weapon that the other species leaned towards when the ISC was founded was kind of like a good way of, like, you know, pointing out that, you know, theirs was the way forward.
Mm-hmm. Understood. But, okay, Chris, Wrong. Chris has mentioned this thing. Oh, I think SFBs are used to speed 32 plasma now, so that would be a tweak. Yes, but that is not the audience that I was looking for. The whole idea, in my mind, of republishing the SFB Designer's Edition is not to attract SFB players, not to create new SFB players. That's not what it's about. It's about reintroducing the classic game with the classic rules, all the, you know, with the limitations of those empires, those, you know, because there weren't that many at the very beginning, but also the number of rules were a lot smaller. There were not that as many as there are today. And Chris, I can't blame the SFB people to wanting. Okay, anyone who would actually buy the SFB Designer's Edition that was republished, the only SFB person who would buy that is a person who is what I consider an SFB collector, i.e., it doesn't matter what the rules say. They wouldn't be playing it. They'd be just collecting it. Versus a new person who says, oh, Starfleet, you know, maybe classic Starfleet battles or something along those lines, which basically says that this isn't Starfleet battle, the one that your grandfather told you about. You know? And I would want to first play it. Right. Exactly, Chris. I'm thinking about attracting new players. That's the whole goal of if you go retro and come to SFB or re-releasing the Designer's Edition as a new product, is to gather up, you know, get the more new players. And I'd want to leave the 20-speed plasmas because of it was there in the original, and unless there was a real good reason not to. A real good reason to make them a speed 32. I mean, real good reason. As in, it's completely unbalancing to the ships and the way they interact. Now, the one thing, obviously, would be a gotcha, which is the people who would actually be testing this is probably the players that normally play SFB. So that's the gotcha there. Oh, yes. Chris, I would love to create a computer opponent version of Starfleet Battles. You know, of the Designer's Edition. Not the full edition, but the Designer's Edition. I would love to do that. I think that would be fantastic. And I need to look into that some more. I've done some research on using the Unity engine, which I thought I could get away with a lot more than I could. You know, so it'd be a lot more work than I originally expected. But anyway, Gary, actually, it's getting late. I need to shut this thing down. It's been an absolute pleasure to having you around. You have a good night.
Hey, same to you. And although for the record, just very quickly, I think it'd be better either to, if you want to have it stick with being SFB, maybe do a fancy version of the cadet rules or, double down on Federation Commander and stuff, whatever, because I'd be wary about bringing back an old game system that you're going to basically people, because even if you do put big red letters on the front saying this is not the current edition, if people basically buy it and then they think it's the edition, and then suddenly they go to Captain's Edition and it's completely off, then that's going to cause a disconnect. So
anything, there's no way I can do actually implement the Federation Commander rules as said done, because I've done quite a bit of them and it is not an easy task. And Lord knows I have all, I people already run into issues with the Federation Commander portion where I actually lock down a lot of the things that you cannot do in Federation Commander in the online client because of, and sometimes the problem is I get the rules wrong. And then you know, I don't find out until much later, and then people have a bad experience from that. And so, you know. But I know the SOP...
Sorry, just to give you a final...
Yes.
Sorry, just to give you a final note is... Because to go back to BattleTech one final time is they did release a recent starter box, which basically comes with a couple of maps, and it comes with two BattleMech miniatures, and it comes with the rules to use those two against each other. And also, it also gives you little cardstock mechs that you put on the table because it's not forcing you to use the miniatures, whatever. And then the next box gives you more Innosphere mechs, and then the next box gives you plant mechs and so forth. So it's basically a way to kind of like, if you want to go with Office Strike, you've got a different route for that. Just buy the Commander's Edition and buy the miniature shelf, that's fine. But if you want to go with the so-called Plastic BattleTech, you can basically go like Starter Box, Game of Armor Combat, and so forth. So it's almost like if you want to go like a separate route with Fed Commander, then you've got Klingon Border, Romulan Border. But if you've got SFB, then you could do like a spruced up version of the Cadet game. And then from there, you can basically decide, do you want to go into a basic set or do you want to just get the Master Rulebook and work it out for yourself and so forth. So, because right now you can't get the Cadet rules for free, but maybe a splashier version of them, what might be a good, you know, Kickstarter project or something, I don't know.
Okay. That's possible.
That was a fast. I didn't mean to, because I know the time's running out. I didn't want to be too long saying that.
Yeah, understood. Okay. Well, Gary, you have a good night.
Yep.
Okay. So we had a little history lesson with BattleTech and what's happening on with BattleTech for most of the a good bit of the show. And, you know, Gary's idea of sprucing up the product, obviously the big question about that overall is just that, why? Because the big question is why? Because of the reason why you would do something like that, whether it's the Cadet version, Cadet Edition, or FedCom or whatever edition that would have to be done with, the only reason, just like the whole idea of doing a retro, you know, republishing the retro, is to get new players to a game designed by ADB. You know? So, you know, I agree with the idea that to create a designer's edition of SFB that people would play online. Iggy, you're going to have to spell it out for me because I know what ASL is. I just don't know what ASL SK is. When it comes to that SFB, a computer opponent, that is actually kind of partially done. Okay, starter kit. The tough part about it is integrating the engine into the client. That's the gotcha because of the only way otherwise to do is actually redo it from scratch. Do the whole system from scratch. You know, have a whole different client, which is for people to learn the Cadet Edition, which is, you know, which would be a totally different project. Would that be possible? Maybe be possible. The question is, what would that be a benefit to me? You know, would people actually buy a service where they're going to be playing the Cadet Edition of SFB? Don't know. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.